All right. Do you need a hand out back there? Just hand. Yeah, talking to you, Maddie. Here you go. Maybe I should put a stack back there for other people coming in. All right. Thanks, Derek. All right, I thought since we're not having worship this morning and since it was Derek's idea as well, it might be a good way to start to get us in the right sphere, just to start with a prayer. So if you could just bow your head or kneel, we'll say a prayer. Lord, as we continue to study freedom and rationality, we are so grateful that you are leading us into the mysteries of faith with understanding. Our Father, who art in the heavens, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, as in heaven, so upon the earth. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we also forgive those debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen. O Lord, forgive us our trespasses,
as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Amen. Okay, I don't know if anyone has come in the last minute or two, but if so, there are booklets in the back that you can grab and follow along with. And the way we'll do this is feel free to ask or interject or interrupt, and we will go with your question or comment as long as I deem possible within the constraints of time. Scott Frazier at Brenathan College refers to it as the timepiece of doom. So unfortunately, we are subject to the constraints of the timepiece of doom, but don't let that keep you from interjecting with a question, because we'll take it for as long as possible, and then we'll just have to move on, and I'll try to entertain as much as we can as far as thoughts and questions. So you all have the booklet, and you can see that the title is Rationality and the Affirmative Principle. So we got 2 days of freedom, which is appropriate, because we can't even talk about or think rationally without freedom. So we covered freedom, kind of two ends of it. As Brad said, Matt gave it to us and Bradley took it away. But within both of those presentations, we've got the bedrock ideas that allow us then to understand what we do with our freedom. And that's rationality, what we can do with our freedom. So what we're going to start with is True Christian Religion 508. If you open up your pamphlet, it's the first three pages. And I'm going to read through this passage, and it is probably the single most well-known memorable relation in the new church. And a memorable relation, of course, is when the Lord had Swedenborg experience something in the other world and write it down for us, frankly, to experience ourselves through him today. It's different than the doctrinal, which is more philosophical kind of revelation that the Lord gives us in a lot of the heavenly doctrine. It's experiential. And it's a very important part of the Lord's second coming, the experiential revelation that he gives us that teaches us just as much about the internal sense of the word as the doctrinal part. And in some ways, it can be the proof of all of the doctrine through experience. But the experiences that the Lord chose for us to now experience ourselves. So, without any further ado, I'm going to read through it. And as I do, try to put yourself in the shoes of Swedenborg as he's explaining what he saw. Just really try to allow the Lord to guide your mind into seeing with your mind's eye what he saw. And if you want some help doing it, the picture on the front is a stained glass window from the cathedral in the small chapel where baptisms are often done, which is at least one rendering or one depiction of this memorable relation. All right, I will get started. And if you want to follow along, of course, it starts on page 2. One day, There appeared to me a magnificent temple, square in form, the roof of which was crown-shaped, arched above and raised round about. Its walls were continuous windows of crystal. Its door was of a pearly substance. Within, on the south side towards the west, was a pulpit, on the right-hand side of which lay the open word, enveloped in a sphere of light, the splendor of which surrounded and illuminated the whole pulpit. In the center of the temple was a sanctuary, before which there was a veil, at that time raised. And there a golden cherub stood, with a sword turning hither and thither in his hand. While I looked at these things, the significance of each one of them flowed into my meditation. The temple signified the new church, the door of pearly substance, entrance into it, the windows of crystal, the truths that enlighten it, the pulpit, the priesthood and teaching, the word lying open upon the pulpit and illuminating the upper part of it, signified the revelation of the internal sense of the word, which is spiritual. The sanctuary of the center of the temple signified the conjunction of that church with the angelic heaven. The golden cherub therein, the word in the sense of the letter. The sword waving in his hand signified that this sense can be turned in any direction, provided it is done in adaptation to some truth. The veil before the chair being raised signified that the word is now laid open. Afterward, when I drew near, I saw this inscription above the door, Nunc licet, it is now permitted, which signified that it is now permitted to enter with understanding into the mysteries of faith. From seeing this inscription, it came into my thought that it is exceedingly dangerous to enter with understanding into dogmas of faith that are concocted out of self-intelligence and therefore out of falsities. And still more so to confirm them from the word by this, the understanding, by this means the understanding is closed above and gradually below as well to such a degree that theology is not only despised but obliterated from the mind, as writing on paper is by worms or the wool of garment by moths. When the understanding abides only in political matters which have regard to man's life under government where he is, and in the civil matters pertaining to his own employment, and in domestic affairs of his own house. And in all these things, he constantly kisses nature, and owing to the allurements of her pleasures, loves her as an idolater, loves the golden image in his bosom. Since then, the dogmas of the present Christian churches have not been formed from the word, but from self-intelligence and therefore from falsities, and also have been confirmed by certain passages from the word. By the Lord's divine providence, the word among the Roman Catholics has been taken from the laity, and among Protestants has been opened, and yet has been closed by their common declaration that the understanding must be held in obedience to their faith. But in the new church, the contrary is the case. There, it is permitted to enter with the understanding and penetrate into all her secrets, and to confirm them by the word, because her doctrines are continuous truths, laid open by the Lord by means of the word, and confirmations of these truths by rational means, cause the understanding to open above more and more, and thus to be raised into the light in which the angels of heaven are. That light, in its essence, is truth. And in that light, acknowledgement of the Lord as the God of heaven and earth shines in its glory. This is what is meant by the inscription, nunc licet, over the door of the temple, and also by the veil of the sanctuary before the cherub being raised. For it is a canon of the new church that falsities close the understanding and that truths open it. After this, I saw above my head something like an infant holding in his hand a paper. As he drew near to me, he increased to the stature of a medium-sized man. He was an angel from the third heaven, where all at a distance look like infants. When he came to me, he handed me the paper. But as the writing was in rounded letters, such as they have in heaven, I returned the paper and asked him to explain to me the meaning of the words there written, in terms adapted to the ideas of my thought. He replied, "This is what is here written. Enter herein after into the mysteries of the word, which has heretofore been shut up. For the particular truths therein are so many mirrors of the Lord." So we have this image of the Temple of Wisdom, it's often referred to, where Swedenborg was able to look in and see this light shining from the Word, which is the internal sense of the Word, which is the second coming of the Lord, shining light into the sanctuary. The veil is up, it's not down, because we can now read the Word in the internal sense and shine, have that own light shine into our own minds. And what is the result? So many mirrors of the Lord. Everywhere you look, when you look at the divine truths that the Lord's revealed in his second coming, are mirrors of the Lord. The Lord with us through understanding the truth that he offers there. So to start out, I thought I would ask, what are, for you, maybe just think of the first thing that comes to mind when I ask, what are some mysteries of faith which you have entered into with understanding as a result of the Lord's second coming? So just think about that for a second. Maybe one comes to you immediately. One came to me and then a bunch more and then I had to stop. But I'm going to ask for volunteers. We'll just take a couple. But just think for a second. What's one thing you know now you would bet your life on that you wouldn't know without the Lord and his second coming? Something that other people might call... Yes, Shannon.
Reality of heaven.
Heaven. That there is a heaven. You would bet your life on that, wouldn't you? I mean, there is no doubt in your mind. Heaven exists. That's a great one. That was one that came to mind for me too. Yes?
That the threefold word can guide us in every single area of our life.
Can I try to shorten that down?
You sure can.
That the word is the Lord? The threefold word is the Lord.
Guide us.
Can guide us. Okay.
That it tells our story.
Everything in the word can guide us. And there's no doubt in your mind?
No doubt.
No doubt. You would bet your life on that.
I would bet my life.
Okay. Well, all right. So we've got the word. We've got heaven. Yes, Rachel. Marriage is what?
Eternal.
Marriage is eternal. Who would bet their life on that? I know I would. Carla's not here, but you can tell her I said that. Oh, no, there she is. Would you bet your life on that? All right, good. That's good. All right, well, that's... Well, go ahead, Jennifer. Do you have no... Oh, that marriage is eternal.
Oh, okay. There's another. I thought there was another.
Marriage... Well, let's take one more. We'll take what... We could just do this for the next hour. Oh. All right, Lisa. That God is love. The Lord is divine love itself. That if there is anything of love we experience in our life, it is from the Lord. Fair enough? The Lord is divine love. He is love itself. All right. Okay. Go ahead. That is just, you had, I want to hear it.
Saving faith takes a lifetime.
Saving faith takes a lifetime. How about just a life? A lifetime? Same thing. Saving faith takes life. Takes a lifetime. Takes action. All right. Oh, all right. I hate to cut. Last one, Tammy. I saw your hand.
Conjugal love flows through the female the second a daughter is born.
Ah, conjugal love comes through the female the second a daughter is born. So more on conjugal love. All right. Well, that we're going to have to put those two together. We'll keep these in mind as we go, though. Marriage is eternal. Everything we get for life is from the Word. Saving faith takes a lifetime. And heaven is real. And Lisa, what was yours? The Lord is love itself. Okay, we would probably all bet our lives on all of those things. Is there anything we know more than those things? Probably not. Now, we have a little tension, we have a little problem here, which hopefully we can resolve. Now it is permitted to enter into the mysteries of faith with understanding. All of those things that you all mentioned, I would imagine that you all have many truths that you would love to talk about on why you believe those things. And any one of them we could have a whole, could be a subject for a whole other Jacob's Creek, and maybe some of them will. But, Shannon, is there proof in a tangible, earthly, natural way, and this could be a rhetorical question if you want, that there's heaven?
Not
incontrovertible. Okay. Rachel, can you prove that, Andy, you guys are going to be together forever in heaven? Jennifer, you know, we've got all sorts of wonderful things from the Lord, but we can't put that together with Julie's. How do we know that's going to be salvation in a, you know, where, what proof? You know, I, what do you?
Only experience, yeah. Which isn't really.
But you're.
And I can say that I can see ways in which the Word has changed my life for the better.
Yeah, but it goes back to the Word.
Yes.
And how do you prove that? So we have a tension. These things that we all would bet our lives on, and we know really down, I mean, it's down to the individual cells of our bodies, I think we believe these things that strongly. That's who we are. But wait a minute, how do we enter into these mysteries of faith with understanding? That this is the hallmark of the new church, the hallmark of the second coming. We have a real problem. Maybe. Nina, no problem for Nina. That's good. That's, well, if it's not a problem, then let's just help confirm our answer maybe through these passages. Because that's great if we're all starting there. But actually, that's what the whole class is about, that it isn't a problem. So let's begin to look at how it isn't a problem. I think we're up to page 6 now. All right, so what we're going to look at, there's three sections of passages that we're going to look at. The first section is a description of what rationality is, and that it is a two-step process. Then we're going to look at passages about step 1, and then we're going to look at passages about step 2. And if we have time, we're going to look at an example that the Lord gives us in conjugal love about why it all really matters. And that may be self-evident, but I enjoy seeing proof of it. I like proof. I like corroboration. Some of that is what I'm carrying with me from my former life. And maybe that's why this is more of an issue for me than others. But let's get started then with what is rationality. Because this is why the Lord gives us freedom, is so we can have rationality. Is it faith or is it reason? Which comes first? Do you have rationality so you can have faith, or do you have faith so you can have rationality? Some of the answers to these questions may not be what our rational minds want them to be, which gets us back into this quandary. So we'll just get started here on page 6 with the passage from the Arcana, 2568.2. As regards man, it is one thing to regard the doctrine of faith from rational things, and altogether to regard rational things from the doctrine of faith. To regard the doctrine of faith from rational things is not to believe in the Word, or in the doctrine thence derived, until one is persuaded from rational things that it is so. Whereas, to regard rational things from the doctrine of faith is first to believe in the Word, or in the doctrine therefrom, and then to confirm the same by rational things. The former is inverted order and results in nothing to be believed, whereas the latter is genuine order and causes the man to believe the better. So if we believe the Word, we can confirm everything it says through, I think, what we commonly think of as rationality. Kind of seems backwards to our rational minds. That's where the affirmative principle comes in, and that's how we resolve this issue. That's why the class is called Rationality and the Affirmative Principle. So this next passage, Divine Providence 150.2, explains the two-step process. So we have this broad idea. Now we're going to go into specifics that explain the broad idea. The broad idea is belief in the word first, and then confirmation of that belief with everything we see around us. And you'll see that the formatting on page 6, I've got bullet points. There isn't anything missing from the passage. I just tried to organize it visually in a way that, at least for my mind, seemed easier to access. But none of this is me. It's the Lord. Except for the bullets. All right. Ooh, that's probably bad. For what the Lord teaches, he gives man the ability to perceive rationally in two ways. In one, man sees it in himself that a thing is so as soon as he hears it. In the other, he understands it by means of reasons. He has seen it in himself in the internal man. His understanding is by means of reason in the external man. And then the Lord does something here that I've come to really enjoy, asking a series of rhetorical questions as if we really ought to know the answers to them. And so often I feel I don't, but let's give it a try. Does not everyone see it in himself when he hears that the internal man must be cleansed first and the external by means of it? But one who does not receive a general idea of this subject by influx from heaven may be misled when he consults the external of his thought. From that alone, no one sees otherwise than that the external works of charity and piety apart from internal works are what save. So in other things, as that sight and hearing flow into thought, and that smell and taste flow into perception, thus the external into the internal, when nevertheless the contrary is true. The appearance that things seen and heard flow into the thought is a fallacy. For it is the understanding that sees in the eye and hears in the ear, and not the reverse, so everything else. Now, I don't know about you, but that is a incredible assertion. Yes, please, Mary Beth. Yes, I'm so glad you asked. Not my example, an example the Lord gives us, and we'll stick with sight. We did this with the high schoolers, and had a fascinating... When you get people talking about these things, the truths that come to mind to confirm it, and that's the second step, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but they had some great examples that maybe we'll get to if it comes up. So here's an example. When we did it with the high schoolers, we read from the National Institute of Health, How You See. So we had a picture of the eye, and then Deacon, you were there, and you know, it says you get all these things through the pupil, the light comes in, lens closes down, cornea focuses it, and then, as so often is the case with science, it says, and then we see with our brains. It really says, we see with our brains. Our eyes collect the visual information and begin this complex process. Well, they only get us so far, and then how do you explain it? Well, that's where the Lord comes in. This is Arcana 1954. And I do need to give credit to Stephen Cole, because he brought this up in the clergy meetings a couple of weeks ago. And it seemed like a great way. Mary Beth, I am getting to answer your question, I promise, of answering Mary Beth's question. Okay. Man is in the fallacies of the senses who believes that the eye sees, when in fact it is the sight of his spirit, which is the interior sight that sees through the eye. Now there's more. Okay, I will just read it. You have to have your own reaction. I want to tell you mine, but... Okay, it is the spirit that sees, not his eye. The spirit sees through the eye. The same thing may be seen from dreams, in which a man sometimes sees, as in the day. Now, here's an example that I got. So you can see in your mind's eye when your eyes are closed. So something else must be going on than just external data collection when we can see. And the example that we got in this class was one of the high school students brought up a blind person who paints, an artist, a blind artist. Well, I think blind from birth. How does that person see to be able to paint pictures? And I think landscapes was the main object of this artist's work. So something else must be going on to explain that. Helen Keller is another example. All right, I will not digress further. The case, so okay, the same thing may be seen from dreams in which a man sometimes sees as in the day. The case is the very same in regard to his interior sight or that of the spirit. This again does not see from itself, but still more interior sight or that of a man's rational. Okay, we're getting back to the rational. We can see from our ability to think and compare. Nay, neither does he see this of itself, but does so from a still more interior sight, which is that of the internal man. So there's something more internal to us than just our ability to think. And even this does not see itself. And here's the answer. For it is the Lord who sees through the internal man, and he is the only one who sees, because he's the only one who lives. And he it is who gives man the ability to see. And this, in such a manner that it appears to him as if he saw of himself. That sounds a lot like Matthew was telling us about freedom, that if we could see that right now, I can see all your faces, not because of anything in me, because the Lord's life is in me, filling my, well, then the brain can see, whatever that is, with him, with his life, so that I can see all of your faces and likewise. Without the Lord, none of it, none, it's all happening from the Lord. So, well, we could go all, it's fun just to contemplate that for a minute or two. It becomes overwhelming after that, but this experience, divine love, that's the answer. That's why we can see. Derek, do you have a comment? Okay. Mary Beth, is that an example that helps flesh it out a little bit? Okay, all right. The number is 1954, 1954 in Arcana Celestia. And I've got some extra handouts that I can give you afterwards too, with the passage on it. All right, so we were looking at Divine Providence 150, which talks about thinking from the internal to the external, using sight and hearing as an example that it sure looks like we can see from the outside in rather than from the inside out. But that is because of these things called the fallacies of the senses, which is your five senses give us information, and if we believe that information without anything else, we're going to be led into all sorts of false notions. The classic one that we've dispelled ourselves with even better five senses information, of course, is that the sun rotates around the earth, where it used to be thought the other way around. That was a fallacy of the senses, which has been dispelled by another fallacy. Well, no, it's true that the earth goes around the sun. But the real explanation, of course, is that the sun is in the world because the Lord is divine love itself, which comes into the world correspondentially through the sun, and the heat and light come from there. Anyway, let's not digress further unless you want to on that point. Okay. So we talked about divine love as an example. We talked about the existence of heaven, conjugal love, the saving effect of the threefold word. So do these truths, these things that we would bet our life on, do they flow into our thought through things that come outside of us by reading these passages like we're doing this morning? Or do we see and hear them to the point where we're willing to bet our lives on them? Because if you go back to the first bullet on page 6, we see that the thing is so from the Lord. The way I understand the Lord's teachings here, the answer is yes. We see that it's so, but we can confirm it with truths all around us. That's the two-step process of rationality. Now, another example, Mary Beth, that in a little bit of a different sort of paradigm. If you have read a passage from the writings, one that you've read many times and had this experience, then I think it helps illustrate what's going on here. This has happened to me a lot. You read the passage and it hits you. It's like, now I get it. Whoa, was it really saying that the whole time and I never saw that before? How is that possible? The words didn't change, but now it means something totally different than the last time I read it. And then I go explain it to Carla and she says, well, that's pretty much what it says. It doesn't sound any different to her. But yet I feel like, whoa, this is completely different. And I love it when that happens. And if it happens to you, you just look for the next opportunity because more ignorance can be dispelled. But then you have to do a lot of things different, which is the hard part of it. But anyway, it is like the recognition that your sight comes from the Lord and that you see that it's true when you see it or hear it without a whole new sort of rational process to get to that recognition. I think that's an example of how rationality works. Is we're in a position where we're just ready to see it. That's the first step. We're just ready to see it. Now, the Lord in His divine providence works in an infinite number of ways He won't show us to get us to the point where we're ready to see it. But we don't believe it. We don't really think about it rationally until we see it as true. That turns on its head how the world would have us think about rationality. It really does. And for a former lawyer, it's very hard to accept. Because you got to have proof and corroboration. Yes? Please.
Yeah. I found, as they were when I was sick.
Yeah.
So about what's true and what's the Lord doing.
Yeah.
So to have that memory in myself of, I remember that feeling of affirming that. So I think I can, get back to that sense, but then later on the understanding comes in, which is what really brings the person along. But it's just a neat thought to think of doing that for our children.
I think that's a wonderful point. And for us adults, it can really be inspirational to recognize that innocence, that special childhood innocence, which isn't the kind of innocence that'll get us to heaven because we need to choose from freedom to do what we did when we were little. But it really is inspirational. And those little ones, they have like a direct line that I hope someday I'll get back to, but I've learned a lot from what little ones have to say because they're not clouded by all the things that we have to choose to work through to get back to or to a similar but different state of innocence. That's a great point. Because it is, they're affirming things and they're not encumbered with the second step yet, which we all are. All right, so now how do we get though? Well, one passage about how we can get to the point where we can see something is true. Freedom is the first part of it. We've got that covered. But if we look at page 8, another passage from Divine Providence. So interesting, by the way, that a lot of these teachings are in Divine Providence. I'll just leave that hanging. A reasoner reasons about divine things, whether they are so or not. By the way, I think that's kind of what we do at Jacob's Creek in doctrinal classes and our own personal reading. Because he does not see them from the Lord. Now, hopefully we don't do the second step, but we all do. But wishes to see from himself, and what man sees from himself is evil. By the way, this is eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. When we want to see something from ourselves, from what we know from our five senses exclusively, or what we think we know from our five senses exclusively, without anything from the Lord, that's eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thinking from ourselves rather than from the Lord. Nevertheless, though, this is how merciful the Lord is. Nevertheless, the Lord is willing that a man should think and talk about divine things, I think like what we're doing right now, and also reason about them for the purpose of seeing a thing to be so or not so. So that first step, the Lord in his mercy lets us flail around in all the fallacies of the things that we think are so true because we can touch and feel and taste and see and hear them. So that, provided the end is to see the truth. Provided the end is to see the truth. So the Lord lets us do this, what we're doing right now. Not lets us. He loves it. It's his divine love that sets up a whole system where we'll do it. And as long as we're trying to see the truth, then we're in a position where we can begin to receive that first step of recognition of the truth because it's true. And I think provided the end is to see the truth is a really key point of this passage. And that's the step that allows us to begin to open up our understanding, is the notion that there is truth outside of ourselves. So if that's an idea that we're willing to entertain, then we can begin to enter into the mysteries of faith with understanding. But if we won't ever entertain that, then we won't be able to allow the Lord to pull ourselves out of those things that we are relying only on ourselves to understand or believe. So, yes. Yeah.
It sounds to me, I feel like that's saying you might be the kind of person that gets it.
Yeah.
You might be the kind of person who likes to shoot around and
get yeah.
it. But it sounded a little bit like you were saying they were building blocks.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they are, as far as I can tell. And there's some more passages that I think bears that out.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And my understanding is that those are the simple people who just, they don't get caught up in all this rational stuff. They just know something and they live it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just, it's an interesting.
Oh, I want to tell a story. All right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to digress into my past. You gave me an opportunity. What's that?
You're welcome, or I'm sorry.
You may be sorry. All right, at the DA's office, I was a prosecutor for a few years, and when you pick a jury, you get all sorts of training on what kind of jurors you want as a prosecutor. And this has to do with what kind of person you are. A little bit of a digression, but I think it proves your point. As a prosecutor, you want the people who see things for what they are, doesn't complicate them, you know, because I didn't try a case unless I knew that it was the guy was guilty. So you don't want someone to really nuance beyond reason issues that aren't issues. And so they say you want people who, you know, have lived in the same area for a while, married and have kids, you know, real connection to law and order in the community. And then they said something very interesting. They said that you don't want master's degrees and PhDs. I thought, oh, well, that's weird. I've got a JD. It's kind of a problem. Now I have an MDiv, so this is even worse for me. But so my first jury trial, I'm picking the jury, and you get strikes. You don't have to give a reason. You can strike people for no reason. And you get 7 of those. And I had used up 6, and I had 1 left. And there was a PhD from Penn who was left in the jury pool. And the defense attorney definitely wanted that PhD on the jury. And I had to make a decision. There were some other factors. I don't remember what they were, but I said, okay, I'm going to go with the PhD. Because I still didn't really think, you know, come on. You got to be able to, there's got to be something wrong with this advice. Jamie's starting to shake his head back there. So we try the case, and
with the PhD
on the jury. And when the case is over, you give your closing arguments, the judge reads the instructions to the jury, and then they deliberate. And so I'm up in my office in Montgomery County in the courthouse, sitting there waiting, very, very nervous. And the phone rings, and it's the judge's clerk saying the jury has a question. The way that it works is the foreperson of the jury, you come back into the courtroom, And the fourth person of the jury stands up and reads the question. Guess who was the fourth person of my jury? They're like, oh man, I'm gonna get fired after my first jury trial. There's a lot of crack at stake in this case, by the way, in Norristown, a guy they've been trying to get for a long time. So I was worried. And so the question was, one of the charges was possession of an instrument of a crime. This guy, his house was being searched, and there was a bunch of crack cocaine in his bedroom. He comes into the kitchen, which is on the first floor, while the police are searching the house, has a loaded, a huge revolver, a 357 Magnum, I think it was, which has a
cylinder.
A cylinder, thank you, with six spaces, and it had rounds in each one of them. It was sitting right in his waistband. So a charge for that was possession of an instrument of a crime. I put an expert witness on who is a narcotics detective who explains how drug dealers have guns to protect their drugs, and so you need testimony to show that for that count. The question from the jury, read by the foreperson, was, I don't quite understand how the gun could have been an instrument of the crime when he wasn't actually using it, you know, to protect the drugs or protect himself or something like that. And so the judge reread the instructions. They went back and deliberated for a couple more hours, and I'm biting my fingernails, and they come back, they convict. Afterwards, you get a chance to talk to your jury, and they come out, and it's a great opportunity because you get to learn what you did well, what you did poorly, how things went over with them. And I will never forget it. It was two rows is how I picture it. And in the front row is the foreperson, and in the back row was this guy who I was so happy to get on the jury. He was a janitor in Norristown and had three or four kids and had lived there for a long time. And he's like, yeah, that's your law and order guy that you want on your jury as a prosecutor. And so the PhD from Penn is explaining this possession of the instrument of the crime charge, saying, yeah, you know, it was really difficult for me to see how this gun was an instrument of a crime when he just walked into his house and the drugs were upstairs and the gun wasn't being used in connection with anything having to do with the drug. And the janitor's sitting behind her just going like this. So yes, there are two kinds of people. Long way of agreeing with you, I suppose. I hope you don't regret it, but. And I think I'm one of the people who wants to think about all the nuances. Derek, and then I'm gonna. Lee. Okay, Derek, and then Lee.
One of the things I'm hearing in this so far, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that when we're looking at these things and debating and thinking about it, one of the things we should be listening for is the internal perception of truth. Within ourselves, there's sort of an internal experience that goes, yeah, that's true. And that's part of what we need to be listening for as we exercise our rationality, exploring facts and ideas and word and rational things. And is that
exactly. Right? Exactly. We're going to read a passage in a minute that says almost exactly that. Exactly. Yes, Lee.
I didn't want to go there until you went there.
Okay. Uh-oh. Yeah.
Because he's rational.
Yeah.
And he's not presenting things that I don't understand, then I've accepted his eyewitness testimony.
Yeah. It corroborates it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does for me too. And I think in the Lord's divine wisdom, he presented his second coming in different ways, I think, to appeal to that. We've got the doctrinal, philosophical, theological material, and we've got the experiential material, the testimony, like TCR 508. And it fills out the doctrinal, philosophical nature of the revelation. So I have the same experience as you, Lee, is that it really kind of brings it home. It's funny, it's more true now than ever for me that I love reading the memorable relations. They are really fun to read because when you are just trying to picture what he was experiencing, it is really fun. All right, now let's move on to Derek's point. Derek, that was a very good segue. One more point though. In 508, it said, it is exceedingly dangerous to enter with understanding into the dogmas of faith that are concocted out of self-intelligence. Why is that so dangerous? Exceedingly dangerous. Not just dangerous, not just a problem. Exceedingly dangerous. I think that's a warning. Why is it dangerous? In 508, it says it closes the understanding. It closes the understanding. So that's why it's exceedingly dangerous. The Lord wants us to open our understanding to Him. And if we rely on our own self-intelligence, then it closes our we won't get it. We won't enter into the mysteries of faith with understanding. So that's the caution. Okay, now how does this first step work? We're going to cover a passage on page 9, and then we'll get to Derek's point in a series of passages on the next page. We'll do it that way. Derek's point was that when... Do you want to repeat? I'll try to... Go ahead. You said it very nicely.
I said, as we're exploring and thinking about things rationally from the senses and debating things, what we need to be listening for is that internal recognition of truth that the Lord has flowing into us with something that recognizes truth. That's the starting point of faith, and that's the place where we can then build on from our rationality.
Seeing that... Yeah, seeing that it is so. Yes, Andrea.
I'm getting very confused.
Okay.
This 508 number.
Oh, 508, yes.
That self-intelligence on between what Derek is saying, sort of, how do you tell the difference between internally recognizing that something is true and concocting your own... that it's your own self-intelligence because you want it to be true.
Yeah.
Well,
let's skip right to that answer. We're going to come back to page 9. We're going to go right to page 10. Because this answers Andrea's question. Her question is, how do you know? So how do you know? Yes, Mary Beth.
I just want to make a point to what she said.
Yeah.
For people like us that come from the old church,
yeah.
We were raised and from, like, you know, like you were saying, from a very young age, it's a beautiful thing to be with all the things from the Lord. But we were raised with this blind faith.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
that's.
And so, growing up with that, no, you're not supposed to understand.
Hmm.
This is what it is.
Yeah.
And what that guy says is the truth. And then, you know, and I grew up in the Presbyterian church, but we had the same minister for 25 years. So, he was the all end all, whatever he said. And of course, he had his own slant, his own
truth,
and his own prejudices on everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And recognizing that, I think, for people that grow up in the church don't realize how much we struggle with that. And when you're not married to somebody who's been in the church and you're struggling with it together, it's an even bigger struggle.
Yeah.
And I think it's what turns a lot of people outside the church off.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so automatic to be people.
Yeah. But did everyone hear Mary Beth's point? Mary Beth's point was growing up in a Protestant faith where you're supposed to believe what the minister says, not just yours, many others, you're supposed to believe what the minister says and that's the truth just because he says it, and moving from that faith tradition to one where you only believe what the Lord says because the Lord says it, it's not an easy transition, and I'll say the word frustration because I think I heard a little bit, that it can be frustrating to be in a group of people who don't seem to have a problem with it when it still is a real issue. Is that fair? Okay.
Well,
my first year of... Thank you, Cara. Yeah. maybe we're better liars. Yeah.
Because of where we come from, we don't get that. We get, like, you guys have the answers. And you have all these great remains from a young age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But that feeling of, like, this is from the Lord versus this is from, and again, there's a trust issue that you're telling us your interpretation of what you understand.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up with that, and I've learned that isn't always the best idea.
Well,
I have to learn for myself.
Yep.
That's very overwhelming.
I'm glad you brought that up too, because I wonder if every sermon ought to begin with reference to there's a passage in the Arcana that says a person should not believe what their minister or church teaches, but should go to the Word for themselves to confirm whether he is teaching truth or not. Yeah.
Because what I heard, I didn't believe. And when I got to give me confirmation, and I said, yeah, I don't think so. My parents were like,
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, well, what do you believe? And like, so I spent a lot of time taking my lock, trying to find a key instead of the other way around.
Yep.
And I found the fifth ear, but that mechanism of trying to believe what I'm reading and decide is that I want to believe these beautiful
yep.
ideas so badly that am I believing it because I want to or am
I? Yeah. Right. Well,
when is the light bulb?
Like Cara said, I'm so glad you brought this up. We're all struggling. I don't want to speak for everybody, but I'd be stunned if someone wouldn't say that there's something that they're struggling, would not say that there's something they're struggling with. During my first year of theological school, I just about had a crisis of faith because I came across one of those ones where, like, that's not true. And I went through a really thorough process of going to the Word and the heavenly doctrine and taking time to study and think and allow this to happen. And it did. It did. But it doesn't happen all at once. And the more you do it, I think the more the Lord lets you be confronted by the next one that we have trouble with. And that's what entering into the mysteries of faith is all about. So once we have a recognition in one area, it shines light in another area that then's going to put us back in a state of doubt. Remember Matthew in his presentation talked about being presented with the truth in the other world and then a doubt so that you can compare the two. Well, we can't have a real doubt about something until we have the truth about it. That's the freedom part of rationality, is we can't make a choice between one another until we have both. So I think it's a wonderful point, and I'm really, really glad that you brought it up. And I wish I could say that, well, no, there's a point you get to where it's not an issue. No, it's always, at least on this earth, I think it's always an issue. Rachel, and then Locke, you had your hand up, dude.
I was just going to say, that what Mary Beth doesn't realize is that those are the great questions that she brings to us.
Yeah.
If we fall asleep, and the appearances we already know it, then we're never challenged.
Yep, yeah. Rachel, and then we're going to take a question from Joe, and then we're going to have to move on. Yeah, Rachel.
Just real quick, it just brought up, like, that's why I believe the Lord has given us this incredible gift of intuition, because we're supposed to have this intuition that we're supposed to
Yeah.
Like, let's go into our spirit and quiet time with our relationship with the Lord. And a lot of parents do not.
So if you couldn't hear, Rachel is saying that when she takes the time to just listen to the Lord, in I'm imagining a very reverent sort of mindset that you put yourself in, however you do it, that's when intuition is the word you use, perception is the word we'll see in some of these passages, same idea. That's when the Lord can do what Derek was talking about. Allow us to have an internal recognition, enlightenment, really, that what is true is true. So looking for opportunities to do that. I don't know about one, saying the Lord's Prayer, so do you ever have ideas come into your head while you're saying the Lord's Prayer? That's not a coincidence, and sometimes they come from different places, but maybe I'm the only one who has that problem. But that's one way, I think, to do what you're talking about. But there are many different ways to do it. And I think Rachel's encouraging us all to look for opportunities to do that kind of thing. And I think that's great advice, because it'll facilitate this process. Thank you. All right, Joe, and then we're going to move on.
Well, I think we look at that phrase, go to the Word.
Go to the Word.
And sometimes we sort of expect to, you know, open it up. Oh, there's the answer. But I don't think it works that way. I think We need to read the Word every day and keep reading it and keep reading it. And if there's something we don't understand, we might find that a week later, as we're reading something in the Word, including the writings, we'll find something that sheds light on what we didn't see before. Or it might be a year later, or 5 years later. But I think going to the Word means making a habit of going to the Word on a daily basis. And you'll find that something will pop up from the Word that answers a question that you had some time ago. There's no particular index that you can dial up a problem and find an answer. But it may be there in your head working away, and at some point, an answer will come up.
Thanks, Joe. It's not our timeline, is it?
No.
It's frustrating, though.
Yeah, it can be frustrating.
Yep.
But after it, because that's what the Lord wants to do.
Well, I think that's the freedom part. He doesn't present it to us until we can accept it freely. Is maybe one explanation why it doesn't happen on our own time. Page 11, just going to summarize the affirmative principle, the first step of rationality, and then we're going to get into the second step, and then hopefully look at an example, because we actually only have like 8 minutes left. Page 11. To affirm the things which are of doctrine from the Word, or to think and believe within ourselves that they are true because the Lord has said them. This is the principle that leads to all intelligence and wisdom, and is to be called the affirmative principle. So that's the hallmark passage regarding the affirmative principle. There are several passages before it, which draw it out a little bit more, but I just wanted to draw your attention to that one. This one, at least to me, shows how central and important the affirmative principle is. Believing what the Lord says because He says it. If you ask a child, if the Lord was in the room and told you something, would you believe it? It would be ridiculous for them to not believe it. That's what the affirmative principle is all about. Okay, now let's get on to the second step, because this is what I like, what I think human beings really like, because we get to use our five senses and everything else we love to use in the second step. That's the confirmation step. The confirmation step is what comes after we recognize something to be true, an internal enlightenment, then we can confirm it in everything that we see around us. Everything that we see around us. I'll read one passage and we'll talk about how this works. The second passage on page 12, these passages in this section flesh out this idea, but the second passage on page 12 is a good representative passage of this idea. Those who think from an affirmative principle can confirm themselves by whatever things rational, by whatever thing, whatever memory knowledges, think facts, scientific facts, whatever things philosophic they have at command, for all these things to them seem, all these things are confirmatory and give them a fuller idea of the matter. So let's just go back to our examples, that the Lord is divine love, that there is a heaven, that marriage is eternal, salvation is from the truths of the Word over a lifetime. If those are also things you would bet your life on, take a second, any of those, if one of those resonates with you, take a second to think about in your mind, what are things rational, what are scientific facts, what are philosophical notions that confirm those ideas? So for conjugal love, that conjugal love is eternal. Well, Nathan just walked in the back of the room. That confirms it for me. My goodness, he just fell down too. But, you know, so you look at little children and the role that parents have with little children and offspring and use, that's part of marriage and conjugal love. That's a confirmatory thing, almost on a scientific, it is on a scientific fact level. You know, you hold a little infant and that confirms heaven for some people because they can feel the presence of celestial angels with that little infant. I bet my life on that. I know they're there taking care, under the auspices of the Lord, infants in heaven are, and that has an effect on earth too. So just take another minute or two maybe to think about what are those things when you walk out the door that you might not think about all the time, but confirm some of these things that are bedrock principles of your faith. And then you can start to recognize them, and that's what we really do a lot of, is once we have the first step, then in that area, because there's always going to be more areas where we take that first step of seeing that it's true, and then we can begin to confirm more and more things. You know, eyesight, that we see everything from the Lord, not that we see things from only external stimulus. We may walk out the door and be able to confirm that through all sorts of things. And it's pretty fun when you see scientific facts that do that too. Like, well, I won't get into it, but just read papers, you'll see studies about how the brain works, and it confirms all of this stuff. It's so cool. They're like, wait, no, he was wrong about that. Oh, well, now it actually seems like science is catching up. So that's how the rational part of it, what we would call the rational part of rationality works. It's confirming things through our minds, through reasons, through comparisons. But only after we've taken this step of the affirmative principle, the yes, I see that it's true. Was that a hand? Okay. All right. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left. And page 14 and 15 show why this is so important. And this is just one example, all sorts of examples. But this one seems really timely, even though it was written 245 years ago. This is from Conjugal Love. If the reason be sought why polygamous marriages have been utterly condemned by the Christian world, no one endowed with whatever gift of acutely penetrating a subject by his genius, let's think the PhDs here, although we can all do it, can clearly see the cause. So anyone who can do that, cannot clearly see the cause. Let me back up. No one endowed with whatever gift of acutely penetrating a subject by his genius can clearly see the cause why polygamous marriages have been condemned in the Christian world unless he has first instructed these following things. So I'm going to read through them. And if you believe these following things are true because they're from the Lord, then it's very, very clear why marriage is between one man and one woman. Number one, that there is love truly conjugal. Number two, that this cannot exist otherwise than between two. Nor between two except from the Lord alone. And that on this love is inscribed with all its felicities. On this love, heaven is inscribed with all its felicities. All the happinesses of heaven are connected ultimately to conjugal love. So unless these knowledges proceed, those four principles and a recognition of them proceed and lay as it were the first stone, to no effect does the mind busy itself to draw out from the understanding any reasons in which it may rest and on which it may stand as a house upon its stone foundation. Why polygamy is condemned in the Christian world. So if we don't have a recognition of some of these ideas as true, it's not going to make any sense. It won't make rational sense unless these ideas are accepted as a prerequisite. Going to the next page, this passage continues. It quotes where the Lord said in the New Testament, where he defined marriage, what God had joined together, let no man put asunder. And then it says, and this is really where it brings it home, why rationality is so important to work the way that it works. But although the Lord dictated these words out of the divine law inscribed on marriage, yet if the understanding cannot support it with some reason of its own, it may by turns to which it is wont and by sinister interpretations, think the extreme danger that we talked about before. It may by sinister interpretations get around that divine law and bring it into obscure ambiguity and finally into an affirmative negative. Now this is a complicated sentence. Affirmative because it is according to the civil law also, meaning, okay, polygamy is outlawed, and an acknowledgement of that. But negative, polygamy is outlawed, but it doesn't seem to be anything wrong with it, but negative because it is not according to their own rational sight. So the danger is if we don't have at least these four ideas from the Lord clear in our mind as being true, our rational minds without that affirmative approach are going to come up with all sorts of reasonings that will cancel out and negate the truth of marriage between one man and one woman. And into this state will the human mind fall if it is not first instructed, respecting the knowledges mentioned above, which shall serve the understanding as an introduction into reasonings. So we start with what we acknowledge is true, and we're not going to get it all at once. We're actually only going to get a little tiny bit at a time. So we can only do this a little bit at a time. And hopefully we can get comfortable with that and work to enter into more areas with the affirmative approach and reason from them. Reason from those things that we know is true, that we have that internal enlightenment from the Lord through His Word on. And that's why the Lord set up rationality the way that He did, to help us, help steer us away from creating ambiguity and obscuring things that our mind is built to do without the affirmation of the Lord's truth first. So here we are, 10:17, and I know we're supposed to congregate at 10:30. I'll be happy to hang around and take a couple of questions if you want to do that just here in the next few minutes. But thank you all very much.